Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, February 9th, 2007, and this is show number 82. Hey, I have a question for you. Have I become too predictable? Like, just because the forecast says rain in it for Southern California next week, you knew that I washed my car today anyway, didn't you? I think I might be getting too predictable. I got a letter from listener Rose about last week's show, and she said, I've been listening to you so long that as you're saying that Honda Bob left your driveway spotless, I'm thinking, what about the power washer? Just as you said that. Oh well, I'm sorry, Rose, I guess I am predictable. Did I tell you I waxed my car last weekend? Oh well. Last week, I announced on the podcast that I would be discontinuing the forums because of all of the awful spam we were getting. Leo and Bart were spending so much time as moderators killing porn posts and sending me the names of people to ban that it really didn't seem worth all the aggravation. Leo is tenacious, though. Instead of killing it, he suggested we use a different piece of software. He turned me on to the new forum software called BB Press from the people who make WordPress. You can learn about BB Press from bbpress.org. The great thing about BB Press is that it integrates Akismet, which is an amazing spam protection plugin that I use on my WordPress blog, podfeet.com. Through no effort on my part whatsoever, Akismet has already removed over 5,000 spam comments on the blog. Akismet is available from akismet.com, and I searched all over their site to try to find a way to pay them, but they just don't take payments from individuals, so I'm afraid it's free. If you're lucky enough to be a business, maybe they have a way for you to pay them. Anyway, I set up the new forums at podfeet.com/forums_bbpress. I know, it sounds complicated, but there's a link in the sidebar, and I'll be working on doing a redirect so that the name is a little less complicated. I would like to get ideas of how to organize the forums. I'm pretty new to this, so I'm not sure what kinds of things you'd like to discuss. So creating the forums ahead of time is kind of tough. You have to decide on these categories. I'm starting this with a general NoCillaCast forum where you can talk about what you've heard on the show, and then a freeware shareware forum, and one for web applications. For now, I'm not separating the Mac, Windows, Linux ideas, because that seems so, well, separatist, doesn't it? Anyway, head on over to the new and improved NoCillaCast forums and have a chat. It's time for part 11 in our Google products review series. Next up is Google Notebook at google.com/notebook. The marketing page says it's a place to clip and collect information as you browse the web, clipping useful info like text, images, and links. You can organize your notes into multiple notebooks, divide them into sections, and drag and drop notes to stay organized. Since it's a web-based application, you can access it from any computer, so you're never without your notes. Except, of course, all those times you're without internet access. They say you can even publish your notebook by making them public. They give some sample notebooks so you can get some ideas of how to use Google Notebook, but I didn't get any great inspiration looking at them, so I just dove right in and gave it a try. As in most of the Google tools, you log in using your Google or Gmail login. The first thing I realized was that they've written this for Firefox and Internet Explorer, and it wasn't really enamored with Safari. Sort of works, but there's a link to download a browser instruction, so I must need that, right? Well, I switched over to Firefox and downloaded that extension. The extension gives you access to the mini Google Notebook feature, which allows you to clip and collect information more easily. There's a really long terms of service document you have to approve, which I must admit I didn't read fully, but it's about the appropriate conduct you should have and your privacy. As I hit agree and download, I noticed that the extension works on XP, Linux, and OS X. So that's cool. I decided to make a notebook about a trip to Tuscany, Italy. Hey, I can dream, can't I? This seemed good because I could create different sections for hotel, airfare, car, and even something on costs and potential dates when I might want to go on this trip. When you start up Google Notebooks, the first thing you do is create a new notebook, name it, and Add Note is the first option, which makes complete sense. To the right is a pull-down that says Actions, and this is where you can add a section heading, rename the notebook, or create a new notebook. You can also choose to collapse all of your notes, show details, or print your notebook. If you're tired of this whole mess, this is where you can delete your notebook too. All right, let's see what this can do. I created a heading titled Villa or Hotel, and it put it in a green bar with a name on it. I went to a site with some fabulous Tuscany villas and just kind of dragged across the screen to select some text and some of the photos. I figured I better try out drag and drop because that's the way I want it to work, so I just dragged it from there into the notebook right where it said Add Note Here, and nothing happened. Well, then I tried clicking Add Note Here, and that left me a field I could type in. So I tried dragging the text and pictures into that field, and then it worked like a champ. I was a little worried that I'd already put in something too big because it took up nearly the entire height of the browser window to look at this one villa. Then I noticed there was one of those little caret triangle things, and I clicked it, and the entire thing collapsed into a single line that included the first bit of text I'd selected as the title. Very nice and clean. Worked really well. Next, I thought this would only be really useful if I can go from this note and find my way back to the web page where I found it to do further investigation. It looked like the links were preserved when I dragged in the text, so I clicked on one of the links, and it took me right to the real web page. Excellent. Next, I happened to right-click on a note, and now there's a new option in my right-click contextual menu in Firefox. It says, Note This, Google Notebook. Wow, that could come in real handy, but I was afraid to use it inside Google Notebook to link to Google Notebook because I was actually inside Google Notebook and I was afraid I might open up a hole in the space-time continuum or something. Well, anyway, I went back to my Villa website and tried just right-clicking on the window to see how Note This would work. It popped up a little window in the bottom right-hand corner of my screen with an inset window that now has my new note in there. It's not as slick as the drag and drop, though. It just throws in the link and doesn't even name it. The inset window can be changed from being set in the corner to being a normal pop-up. It can be minimized into a little taskbar thingy across the bottom of the window, or closed altogether. Remember, this little window is still inside Firefox, is where I'm talking about. Well, the little inset window is pretty cool. It might come in handy while I'm doing research. It's also possible to just simply jot down notes in the notebook, and with Firefox, it allows a fair amount of formatting. Bold, italics, color, changing fonts and size, all that kind of thing. You can even add links into your text, too. I played around with sharing my notebook with the others traveling with me to Italy. To share a notebook, you simply enter a series of email addresses entered by commas, and then enter the message you'd like to send to those people, giving the link to your notebook. In the same window, you can also make your notebook public, but I decided not to go that far with it. I think Google Notebook is pretty cool. The real test will be to see if I keep on using it over time. I'm going to see if I can plan this trip using it. I'll keep you posted on whether I stick with it. I have a couple of quick Google ones here. The quickest is, hey, how would you like to take a trip around Mars? Boy, that's really solving a problem we have, right? Because how would you find directions on Mars? Well, check out google.com/Mars. It's just like Google Earth, but you get to navigate around Mars. Oh well, kind of silly, but kind of cool. Next up is a free website tool from Google called Page Creator from pages.google.com. There's a lot of sites that will do this for you, but let's take a tour through how Google does it. As usual, it doesn't work under Safari. Starting to be a theme. So I switched to Firefox to play. When Page Creator first opens up, your eye is drawn to the Create a Page button. Sounds intuitive. First, it makes you name the page, then you can hit Create and Edit. You start with a fairly blank page with the header showing the name you just gave the page and three places you can type. They walk you through creating a page subtitle, the main content, and the page's footer. To the left, you have a bunch of formatting stuff, along with buttons to enter images and links, which makes it pretty easy. The fun part is that you can change the look with the click of a button and choose from over 50 looks or themes. You can change the layout too, changing how many columns and things like that. Unfortunately, at this point in playing around, it hung up on me. I had a picture embedded, but I wasn't even clicking on it when the menu to change the size, crop, rotate, or remove on that picture popped up, which should happen when you're on the picture, but I wasn't even on the picture, and I was never able to get that pop-up to go away. I couldn't play with the fonts anymore or go to the layout, but oddly enough, I could still change the text on the screen. I finally tried to see if I could tell it to go back to the Navigator page, and it came up with a 404 error. Well, that's not too good. Doesn't sound stable enough for prime time, that's for sure. I should tell you that I did play around with Google Page Creator a long time ago, but I'd forgotten I'd been in there before. I had created a page showing the 4th of July Google logos, and I remember now that it was really, really hard to place those pictures and get them to line up the way I wanted them to. Anyway, if you want to see what I did back then, since what I did this week got lost, go to nosillacast.googlepages.com. It takes forever to load, which makes no sense. So overall, I'd say that Google Pages is not ready for prime time. I decided I'd provide them some feedback. Pretty much everything in the Google Labs has a link to provide feedback, instead of just whining about how things don't work. The next product is really intriguing. It's called Google Web Accelerator, from webaccelerator.google.com. The site claims that it works with your browser to help web pages show up in a snap. Like I said, intriguing. It does say that the main benefit will be seen by broadband customers, not by dial-up folks, which is kind of odd. Isn't it the folks on dial-up who would really need this? Anyway, it says that it works by several methods. The first is by sending your page request through Google machines dedicated to handling Google Web Accelerator traffic. It also stores copies of frequently looked at pages to make them quickly accessible. It downloads only the updates if a web page has changed slightly since you last viewed it. It prefetches certain pages onto your computer in advance. It manages your internet connection to reduce delays. And finally, it compresses data before sending it to your computer. Google Web Accelerator only works with Windows 2000 or XP and IE or Firefox on those operating systems. Well, I was game to try this, so I fired up Parallels to give it a try. I downloaded and installed it on IE and XP, which ran very, very quickly. It closes your browser, runs the installer, and then reopens it for you. It starts at a web page that explains that there's a speed limit bar. And that speed limit bar shows you how much time you've saved since you installed it. You can even reset the timer whenever you want. It's hard to tell if it's actually working, but I did notice that it didn't always claim it had saved me time, so maybe the little timer is telling the truth. I suppose there's people out there who would have checked this through some very robust technologies, you know, doing compares of files and all that. But they probably couldn't get away with just giving me a timer that claims they save me time. You can also set some preferences, like what's your internet connection speed, whether to do the prefetching of web pages. That's not that illegal thing that HP was doing in that scandal, was it? Oh, no, that was pretexting. Guess we're safe. Let's see, you can have it highlight prefetched links with a double underline. I'm thinking that what they mean is that it's going to go fetch the results of the links on the page you're on before you even click on them. So let's say you're reading the NoSillaCast blog, it could be finding the links for you and prefetching them while you're busy reading and not requiring anything of your internet connection. After I enabled prefetching of the links, I would swear it was way faster to hit those links. Things I clicked on literally blinked on in an instant. I opened up podfeet.com on OS X and on Windows, so I've got it side by side in the two operating systems. I went over to OS X, and I clicked on the Google Talk link I had there, switched over to Windows, clicked on the same link in there, and even though Windows had to wait for me to get over there and ask for it, Windows got to that link first by a comfortable margin. Google Web Accelerator really does seem to work, so you might want to give it a try. If you're wondering about privacy, which seems like a reasonable question, given that they're caching a lot of info and using their engines to work on your surfing, there's a whole section on privacy over at webaccelerator.google.com. Give it a try if you're irritated with slow web surfing speeds. Sure wished it worked on OS X, though. Man, I would definitely keep that thing running. Listener Leo turned me on to something really interesting that he's added to his blog, dhost.info/leotech/WordPress. There's a link over in my blog roll on podfeet.com, so you don't have to write all that down. And of course, it's also in the show notes. Anyway, he's installed a WordPress plugin that allows visitors to his site to chat live with him through video or text if he's online. And you can also leave him a voicemail this way, or a video mail if he's away. We were able to get the video mail working, and the video chat seemed to work at least one way. At first I could see and hear him, but he couldn't see or hear me. I decided to try this out on podfeet.com and see what came of it. The tool Leo turned me on to is called Wengo Visio, and it's a free Flash-based widget that you can embed into your blog/webpage to allow readers to call you when you're online. There's no download, no subscription, and no authentication required for the caller. As the host, I had to create an account, including my email address and my website URL. Once I did that, it came up with some code to embed in the sidebar, and shazam, I had Wengo Visio. If you were to go over to my website, you'd be able to click on the Wengo Visio icon in the right sidebar, and then you could click to leave me a video or audio voicemail. There was one downside here. When I created the account, I used my allison@podfeet.com address, but once I realized I'd be mailed video files, I wanted it to go to my nosillacast@gmail.com address. I tried to change my existing account, but there was no place to do that, and I tried creating a new account with a new nickname, but I kept getting an unknown error 1 with no explanation. They do have forums that they want you to go to for technical help, but the forums link takes you to forums for the Wengo phone application, which is a beta Skype alternative. Maybe we're going to need to check that out too. I sent them an email. Let's see if they respond with any help. I'm guessing I can't reuse that URL for a second account. The good news is we tested it. Leo left me a video email, and it turns out they don't embed the email, the video in the email. You get a link to their website where it's hosted there. So at least it's no worries about the account I set up. In theory, if I would be online, you'd be able to video or audio chat with me live. I had a little trouble with the online part. For me to show up as online, I had to click on the admin button. In Firefox, I thought it might be because I had the extension FlashBlock running, so I disabled FlashBlock and then it did work. I'd rather just switch to Safari, but I was having trouble with it right then. Unrelated problem, but it kept quitting on me. And logging into admin is one of the things that makes it quit. Another thing that's annoying is that the on-screen widget is sort of a rogue thing. It kind of wanders around my web page depending on how wide I make my window. Well, to be more precise, it stays in the same place physically on my screen as I widen and shrink my window. So it'll actually end up on top of my blog posts if I shrink the window up a lot, not even still living in the sidebar at all. Well, finally, tonight, listener Tim wrote in shortly after I had put Wengo Visio up and told me that my website was crashing his Safari application. Wait a minute. Didn't I just say I was having trouble with my Safari browser quitting? And didn't I say it was unrelated? Off to Adium for a quick chat with my consultant, Bart. And without telling him what I thought was crashing it, he suggested maybe I had some Flash running on my site. Well, heck, didn't I just say that Wengo Visio is Flash-based? Well, I went over and I turned off Wengo Visio, and suddenly my Safari was crash-free on my site. To test it further, I went over to Leo's blog where he has Wengo Visio running. Boom, Safari crashes. I launched it again, and I went to the Wengo Visio site, and boom, another crash. I launched it one more time, went back to my website, and it fully behaves again. Well, it looks like this software has a serious bug in it that made me take it down off my site. It's too bad, too, because it was pretty cool. I wrote to the developers, and if they fix it, I'll let you know and put it back up on my site. At least for a while as a gag, anyway. One thing I like to do from time to time is to revisit sites and tools to see if they've made any progress. I decided to go back and check out Yahoo Mail again to see if it's changed in the last, probably 3 years since I've tried Yahoo Mail. When I went to log into my account, shockingly, they had deactivated it. What a surprise. But it's okay. They had a button there to reactivate my account. The nice thing was that the default was to keep it alive after this, or I could hit another radio button that would let it lapse if I ignored it for more than 3 months. Well, since I clearly don't care too much about this account, I decided to go easy on them, and I gave them permission to deactivate me. Luckily, this forwarded me to a beta Yahoo Mail, so of course I opted for that instead of the stable release. I should mention, it doesn't work on Safari. Seems like an anti-Safari theme of this show. Maybe I'll title it, It Doesn't Work on Safari. But, of course, it works in Firefox. Yahoo Mail beta is very pretty and very Web 2.0-ish in that as you click on different things, it doesn't repaint the whole window. It just works on the part you asked for. I'm starting to really expect that, and I get irritated when I see the whole screen repaint. One thing that was hard for me to get past was the huge, blatant ads all over the place. When you first go in, it starts you at home instead of your inbox. Well, the home thing was really more of a news aggregator slash advertising page. Now, who would really want to start there? Is there anyone who wouldn't want to go to their inbox first when they clicked on mail? The other thing about the ads is they don't really seem to have anything to do with what you're doing. I put a screen snapshot into the show notes so you could see how obtrusive these ads really are. At least 40% of the screen on my inbox is an ad. Now, I should point out that it might have been because my inbox happened to be empty, so I sent myself an email and that huge ad I show you in the show notes disappeared, but then a 2-inch-wide vertical banner ad came up on the right, and then, of course, I have the 3 2-inch-wide ads in the bottom left, offering to get me a degree, get a new mortgage rate, and to see my credit score. The banner ads on the right were in Flash, so it even wasted processor power showing them to me. Maybe I'm spoiled, but I'm not used to this much advertising coming at me. It was also noteworthy that none of these ads had anything to do with what I was writing about. Now, I don't use Gmail, but one of the things I've read about anyway is that Gmail at least targets the ads to what you're talking about in your email. I know there's people who worry about the privacy in that, but come on, at least, make it something I might click on. I mean, if I'm sitting there talking about my job, why would I want to go to University of Phoenix to earn a master's degree? I don't know. It was unrelated. That was a bad example, but you know what I mean. I did like that they've built in shortcuts. Like when I clicked on the Compose button, a window came up saying, "Hey, did you know you could just hit N instead?" That was cool. I like shortcuts, but I have a problem when they give you a big pile of them all at once because you're kind of like, well, I don't remember which one I'm going to really use. So I like that this kind of taught them to you one at a time. If you did a function that there was a shortcut for, it would just give you a little hint. They also put up a cute little hint thing on the right-hand side showing me some more shortcuts I could use as I worked. In great Web 2.0 style, I can drag and drop messages into folders, and those folders were very easy and intuitive to create. Unfortunately, after I dropped a couple of messages in there, Yahoo Mail Beta could no longer read them. It suggested that I log out and go back in, but that didn't help either. I'm afraid that's kind of an unacceptable showstopper bug, but it is beta software. There's also a nice little bar across the bottom, though, that gets you into your calendar, and it shows you little pop-ups of what's coming up in the next few days, so that was kind of cool. Here's an odd thing, an odd preference setting. The default for sent mail is not to put a copy in your sent mail folder. I think that's kind of weird, don't you? I mean, wouldn't you want sent mail to be in your sent mail folder? Maybe if you don't have a lot of disk space and or web space and you don't want it clogging up your disk space, you wouldn't want it, but that's pretty much where I go to see what I've done and try to remember who I wrote to about different things. But the good news is I was able to find in the options where I could change it to more normal behavior, putting sent mail in the sent mail folder. What's the sent mail folder for anyway, if not for sent mail? Okay, I should get off this one, but it was just really weird. When I wrote an email to my Yahoo account, from my Yahoo account over to podfeet.com, it asked me if I wanted to put that name in the address book and let me fill in the first and last name. The next time I tried to write to myself at Podfeet, it recognized my name and filled it in and then helpfully asked, "Do you want to add it to your address book?" That's kind of weird, but I figured, all right, I just pushed the wrong button earlier, but then it happened a third time and I said yes again. So I went and looked at the address book, and now, you got it, I'm in there three times. There were actually two failures at this point. One, it didn't know that I'd already done it and kept duplicating it, and two, that it didn't notice it had a duplicate entry. The third problem I had with it was that I was only able to delete one of these entries, so after all was said and done, I still had a duplicate entry. One thing that was kind of interesting was my address book was still there from 3 years ago or whenever the last time I used it, so that was kind of cool. Well, that was the point when I decided I was done playing with Yahoo Mail Beta. They've made a lot of progress in making it pretty. They've made it very, very responsive, giving it that modern web 2.0 feel, and it's very, very user-friendly and extremely intuitive. I like the little tips. The only problem is that it kind of doesn't work right. They absolutely have to fix the bug that items can actually be read after they're put in folders. Like I said, that's a showstopper. And the duplication in the address book is a bug they need to fix too. Even if these issues were fixed, I don't know if I would pick this service because of the obtrusiveness of the ads. Well, let's see how Yahoo Mail Beta goes in the coming days, months, years, and maybe I'll give it another try. And now, a word from our sponsors. Hey, it looks like HDA Bob has been wandering down Nostalgia Lane. He's written an interesting story from around 1950 till now, chronicling his life by the cars he has owned. He starts with his first vehicle he ever drove, an Allstate 125. That was a small two-stroke motorcycle, and he took us from there all the way through to his 2005 red Honda Element. I put an image of the Allstate 125 in the show notes. I wanted to see what it looked like. It's practically a motorbike. And in the image, it says the price was $295.50. You can read the whole story over at hdabob.com. It is important that we not just enjoy ourselves while over at HDA Bob. We're trying to be learning about things too, right? Well, Bob has updated his pages about fuel injection. One of the things I really like about Bob's site is how he puts in these great graphics showing the parts of an engine that he's talking about. His pages on fuel injection are no exception. Hey, I can see the fuel injectors in that picture. I remember when Bob replaced the injectors on my 1984 Honda Accord. This is cool to see how they fit into the system. I know, I'm easily wowed by a cool picture, but the real meat is in the text. In this section, he answers questions like, which fuel should you use? Do you really need the expensive stuff? He says, don't be gulled by slick oil companies' marketing ploys about the benefits of premium fuel. Few new cars really need it, and those that don't won't run any better from using it. He does go on to explain that your owner's manual is where you can get the truth, and gives more hints about how to best care for your car without wasting your money. Bob believes in spending money on preventative maintenance and not spending money on fluff. Go check out his instructions on fuel injection at hdabob.com. A few weeks ago, I reviewed an application called Small Image, which allows you to quickly and easily convert images into smaller formats. I was delighted with that because I needed something that I could use to shrink screen snapshots for putting in my show notes. Well, I've been using it for a while for the last couple of weeks, but I think I'm going to stop because the quality of the JPEGs it creates are pretty bad. I don't know if you've noticed a degradation, but boy, I sure have. I was even using the 100% quality setting, hoping it wouldn't compress them worse than they already were, but they really do look pretty nasty. The ones in the show notes this week are back the old way, and I gotta tell you how hard the old way is. I take a screen snapshot, open Photoshop Elements, which takes forever to open. I pull down to Image, Resize, Image Size, then change the pull down from inches to pixels, and then set it to 300 pixels wide. Then I pull down to Filter, on Sharp Mask, set it to 50, hit Apply, hit Save, and then tell it the quality I want. Well, that's a lot more work, but at least the images look grand. That's important, but I just wanted you to know how much I'll be suffering in the future. Here's another quick redux. Ages ago, I reviewed a product called iStat Nano, I tested it, and it didn't really work for me, so I'm not sure whether I reviewed it or not. But it's come out in a new version, and it's absolutely lovely, and it does work now for me. iStat Nano is a free dashboard widget for OS X from iSlayer.com that shows you at a glance wonderful statistics about your Mac. Back when I tried it, it wouldn't give me any good stats because I was on an Intel-based Mac. It wouldn't show me hardly anything at all. Well, now it shows the temperatures for your CPUs and your heatsink, shows you CPU utilization, memory allocation, how much disk space you've used, and network traffic. It's also a quick way of showing you your IP address and even your external IP address. It has a process viewer for your top couple of processes. It shows you your uptime and your battery charge level, and even how many cycles your battery has been through. Heck, if you're really bored, you can even check your fan speeds with iStat Nano. You're probably thinking I'm looking at this awful hodgepodge of graphs and numbers in some huge pile, but actually iStat Nano has a bunch of different screens that you click through, and the little graphs slide across the screen beautifully as you pick each of the different stats. If you're a nut for stats like me and love to watch and analyze your Mac and see what it's doing, definitely check out iStat Nano from iSlayer.com. They also have some other interesting products out there too, like the full application, iStat. Well, that's it for this week's installment of the NoSillaCast. I hope you'll stop by the new and clean forums at podfeet.com/forums_bbpress. Remember, I'm going to make that less complicated soon, so just go to link in the show notes or in the sidebar. As always, send me email feedback at allison@podfeet.com and voice recordings at nosillacast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.